Barbara.
One question about, you're talking about a document coming from Rome. Why do you call it a document instead of calling it an encyclical?
An encyclical is a type of document.
Yes.
Because there are several, when we talk about documents coming from Rome, there are different levels of authority.
I realize that.
Yeah, and so this particular type of document was an encyclical, meaning it's issued by the Pope himself for the purpose of encyclical, of being sent around for people to read. Which is not the highest type of authority document there is, but it's also not the lowest. You know what I mean? And that's why whenever we talk about documents coming from Rome, we have to make the distinction, well, who is this coming from? Is this coming from the Pope? Is this coming from some council with the Pope's signature on it? Is this coming from some council by themselves? Is this coming from an ecumenical council, you know, like in Vatican II? You know, like when all the bishops of the world gather together and they publish documents by the Pope's authority and by their own authority as an ecumenical council. I mean, that's kind of the highest authority you have below the Pope. But so that's why. I mean, there was this talk of, you know, what's this document going to say? What's this encyclical? I don't know if people knew specifically what level of document it would be, but that's what it is. It's an encyclical.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some. I mean, part of the reason why there aren't perhaps as many as one might want is because contraception per se is kind of a new thing. I mean, there was just the withdrawal method, but that's, I don't know if you could really call that. I mean, I guess that's contraceptive. Yeah, I mean, it is a contraceptive mentality. We don't think of that as a means of contraception, but it is, I guess, if you want to call it that. And the Bible talks about that. The Bible talks about a man shall not waste his seed. And again, this is what I talked about before, about, you know, even within marriage, sexual acts need to be oriented towards, you know, completion in the marital act, not completion outside of the marital act. Because, again, we're not supposed to waste our seed. So that's the only, I mean, off the top of my head, that's the only one that comes to me. I'm sure there are others. But I don't know that they had, you know, I have heard stories about different barrier methods, very, very primitive types of barrier methods that were around. But I can't think of, again, off the top of my head, any particular scripture. But, again, this is one of the nice things about being Catholic, that we don't have just the Bible. We have 2,000 years of teaching tradition. So, any other questions? Yes?
I know that sometimes young ladies and women have terrible trouble, periods where they are.
Sure.
So impacted that the doctor has to do something, mm-hmm. and what the doctors do now is just want hormones,
sure.
birth control pills. What's the...
Right. And that's interesting, too, because, you know, a lot of times for... Whenever girls would have like ovarian cysts, that seems to have been the standard. You just put them on a pill, you know. And yes, would it get rid of the cysts? Yeah. But most doctors now, it seems, agree that there are other ways and even other more effective ways of handling things like ovarian cysts than just by putting someone on the pill. And the other thing that kind of ties into this is one of the nice things about NFP versus the so-called rhythm method, because people, you know, sometimes this is what people think about the Catholic Church. They think, oh, you guys think that the only method is the rhythm method, which is not true. NFP, the rhythm method is based on a calendar, right? And a large majority of women have a cycle that is not regular. And the beautiful thing about NFP is that it follows the woman's cycle, however regular or irregular it is. It does not follow a calendar, you know, which the rhythm method does. The rhythm method is, well, this is when you had your period, and boom, 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 and count this and that, and boom, you know, go from there. But that assumes that the woman's cycle is is regular, which often they're not. So that, again, that's the nice thing about NFP. But, you know, I don't want to go as far either as to say, like, the pill is, you know, incarnate evil, because it's not, because I can think of certain circumstances, I guess, in which the intention of the doctor to put someone on the pill, again, and the intention of the person taking the pill may not be at all contraceptive. It might be to handle the ovarian cyst. It might be to try to regularize the cycle and to try to kind of put it on track, so to speak. But again, most a lot of doctors, it seems nowadays, would tell you that there are other and even better ways of doing that and of treating those kinds of things. And again, Dr. Smith talks about that too, I think. So. Yes, Scott? I'm there, Scott.
I just had a question in terms of being a pastor. How would you counsel, like, if you had a couple who came to you and one was in favor of NFP and one wasn't, how would you handle that? Just curious, pastoral.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, again, there is so much ignorance about it, and to explain to people what NFP is, what it is not. You know, it's not the rhythm method, and this is what it is. And yes, it does require a little bit of effort, but let's show you the statistics. It is more effective than all these other forms of birth control. And if you're trying to get pregnant, it's one of the most effective ways to get pregnant. It's also one of the most effective ways to prevent getting pregnant. So I think a lot of it just has to do with education. And for people to have a Christian view of sex, you know, to let people know that sex is a good, holy thing offered by God Himself. And one of the things that contraception does is it kind of treats it as something that just has to be dealt with, handled, you know, as if, you know, women are, and again, this is one of the predictions that Paul VI made, that with the availability of contraception, that one of his predictions was that women would be treated more and more like objects, and we've seen that happen, and their fertility becomes kind of just something they have to deal with. You know, it's like, I just have to get that under control. You know, and to say, no, it's a part of you. And God put it there. Your sexuality is a good thing. Sex is a good thing. It's not something that has to be dealt with or handled like a disease. You know, one of the things I think Dr. Janet Smith talks about, the story where she said, I was always so surprised when, she said, I always kind of got a chuckle when people would, you know, she had worked at a doctor's office, and people would come in and they would say something like, you know, I don't know what went wrong. You know, I used the pill and we used a condom and this and that, and I just don't know what went wrong. And she says, I always kind of think, you know, it's what went right. Like, what happened was what was supposed to happen. You had sex. Like, what did you think was going to happen? You know, like, the question isn't what went wrong. It's what, you know, look at what you and God did, you know. So, again, and that's also why, from a pastoral level, again, there's only so much people are going to take from a celibate priest, but that's why, from a pastoral level, I've been wanting to put together this list of parishioners to kind of be able to say, look, these are other people in our own parish who are practicing NFP and who can get into the nitty-gritty with you and talk about the details and how effective it is and how much effort it really requires and how effective it is, and all that stuff, you know. So that's what that's been my kind of approach, is let's get this list together and have that available to people who want to know.
Well, I know you've only been here for a year, and having that list is great, but have you had any experiences yet where people who've come to you about this issue have actually contacted one of the people?
We just put the list together like a month ago. So, yeah. You're talking about having people contact, you know, some of these people to get advice on NFP and how it works and that kind of thing. So, but it was one of those things that kind of came to me one day, like, well, wait a minute, you know, I know we have people in the parish, you know, so why not number one, check and see if they're willing to be put on this list and to be contacted by potentially strangers and be asked, like, well, hey, you know, tell me about it. You guys do it, you know. So, and the sad thing, too, is, I mean, you look at these statistics, I often wonder how true some of them are, but, you know, these statistics about, not just contraception, but something, you know, like more than 50% of practicing Catholics are contracepting, and more than 50% of practicing Catholics don't actually believe in the Eucharist. I mean, like, you see some of these things that you know, you don't want them to be true, but they sometimes look like they are true.
But aren't there statistics that say that people that practice NSP are more likely to stay married than people that...
Oh, sure.
...contraception are usually tied into the...
Yeah. Yeah, and again, Dr. Janet Smith gets into all of these, and she talks about, you know, the likelihood of divorce and how the divorce rate can go down with these things. And yeah, so, I mean, I kind of wish we had more people. Maybe something we need to do at some point is actually bring in some experts on NFP and kind of do, like, a parish-wide class, not necessarily like a how-to, although perhaps that would also be helpful, but just to kind of spend an entire time talking about NFP and its benefits and what exactly is involved and how it works and the different methods of NFP and that kind of thing. So.
Well, I think I know someone in the parish that actually teaches it. So before I give you her name, I'll ask her if she's...
I think I know who you're talking about, yeah. yeah. So, any other questions?
Just a comment.
Yeah, and that's...
And
yeah.
It doesn't seem to be, at least, it's not yet an American problem, like it is, I mean, it's in Europe,
it's awful, yeah.
But no one's making any noise about it.
Well, that's the thing, is, you know, sometimes it gets so frustrated when people complain about, oh, the Muslims are taking over the world. And I want to say, well, part of that's our own problem. Part of that's because we're not reproducing,
right.
And we are aborting and contracepting ourselves out of existence. I mean... Yeah, yeah, more power to them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because something, I think the, correct me if I'm wrong, but we had a whole class on this. I think the replacement level is something like 2.1 or 2.2 or something like that, because it takes into account some people, like me, who are never going to have kids, and yeah, the fact that so many countries have dropped below that, yeah.
Right.
And they're not really...
Half below one even.
Below, yeah.
It's scary. And just like you mentioned last night at Mass, with the, you know, with the abortion rates and what that's done, I mean...
Yeah.
One of the things I've done before is look at... a very telling way to look at populations of pyramid. I'm sure all of you have seen the population pyramid. And some of the countries that, especially in Eastern Europe, when you can actually look at a pyramid... tell when they legalized abortion.
Mm.
The age structure changed immediately.
Yeah.
Following it. And just like you mentioned last night with the selective abortion, and
yeah.
You mentioned China, I mean, within North Korea, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about, you know, they're aborting the girls at the rate of, you know, some of the, like you said last night, the norm was about
100 to 105.
Right.
Yeah. 105 boys, yeah.
105 babies. Some of these countries now are 120.
120, yeah.
I mean,
and they're going to raise an army. Yeah. yeah, they could.
Anyway.
They could. any other questions? Comments?
Yeah.
No.
There's been some things, I thought you were
No, the church was never big on the pill. Again, there was some confusion about what this document was going to say. And when we talk about the church, let me make it clear that we're talking about the official teaching of the church. There were plenty of priests and nuns and even bishops who were for the pill. But that doesn't mean the church was for the pill. That means that they're going to have to answer to God for that, and that they were in the wrong. And that's why Cardinal Boyle suspended like a third of his priests. Because, again, it was a little unclear for a while what this document was going to say. But again, if you look at the history of Christianity, not just of Catholicism, but for a long time, up until 1930, every single Christian denomination agreed that, like, contraception was wrong and was never allowed. And then it wasn't until 1930, that first group that said, well, just in this very limited circumstance, it's allowed, you know. And the snowball effect from there. But no, I would just encourage you to listen to that CD again. It's a very good talk. You'll love it. You guys can all tell how much I like it, Dr. Janet Smith. And to look at the effects of the pill. I mean, again, everything that Paul VI has said, you know, and we see some of the other effects too, and not just with the pill, but with other means of contraception, like the barrier methods with condoms and things like that, that, you know, people sometimes think, and Dr. Janet Smith talked about this too, about, you know, some of the AIDS crisis in Africa, like, oh, we just need to throw condoms at them. Well, no, that's not going to fix anything, because then you're just giving them license to continue to have sex, and condoms will still break, and you know, that the disease is still going to be spread. You know, that's, we're kind of treating it, again, we're treating them, number one, like animals, if we just think, well, let's just throw condoms at them and that'll fix the problem, you know. We're not treating them as human beings who have, as part of their being, as part of being a human being, you have this reproductive ability. It's part of who you are. It's from God. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, you know. It's not a problem that has to be treated. Part of who you are. It's your way of relating. And so when we see something like the AIDS crisis, we can't just throw condoms at it and expect it to go away. In fact, it hasn't. You know, that's why, you know, the Vatican, in terms of diplomatic relations, has been pushing to get, you know, things like condoms off of the aid that's being sent to these countries. So, yes.
I'd like to ask where, it's my understanding that surgical sterilization is probably one of the preferred methods of preventing pregnancy today in our country. And where does that leave people who have had this kind of surgery in a moral sense, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Does anybody suggest that they should try to get it undone, which is not easy to do?
It's interesting, yeah, you bring that up, because there have been, it's interesting, because there have been a large number of people who, not because they needed it, not because of ovarian cancer or whatever, but who got sterilized, men and women,
yeah,
and who later on kind of had a bit of a conversion experience, if you will, and or just education experience, realized why it was wrong, and have actually gone and had it reversed. And sometimes there are ways of reversing it, sometimes there are not. But the church does not teach, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I was talking about this with someone the other day. Church does not teach that you have, like, a moral obligation to get it reversed. That, like, if you once did this, and if you're really sorry, you know, you have to get it reversed. No. But it's interesting, the number of people who talk about not feeling whole and who talk about wanting to get it reversed so that they can, you know, because again, when you do something like that, you're really treating your body more like a machine, more like this thing that needs to be handled, you know. And it's interesting, you read some of these testimonies, beautiful testimonies by people who have had it reversed and who talk about, even if they have no intention of having children anymore, simply wanting to have it reversed for the sake of kind of being back to how they should be, you know. Now, again, there is no moral obligation. The church does not impose that and say, well, you know, if you're really sorry, you're going to get it reversed. No. And in fact, sometimes you can't, because it would be more dangerous in terms of the surgery and everything else, you know, depending on the age of the person or whatever else. So, and that's why the church is not going to kind of tack on an additional requirement, you know. But there are a lot of people who have been doing that, who kind of realize that they shouldn't have done it in the first place. And again, there may not have been any sin involved. They may not have known better, you know, and then they kind of realize and they say, wow, you know. So.